Vasudevaya. What does kalasya mean? Time. It's of time. Isn't it interesting here, Prabhupada's translated, of the supreme law of the Almighty. Time. Gatim. Reactions. Dashayan. Demonstrated. Na.
No.
Pratikriyam.
Remedial measures.
Citing the stringent laws of the Almighty and their reactions upon living beings, Lord Sri Krishna and the Munis began to pacify those who were shocked and affected. Purport. The stringent laws of nature, under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cannot be altered by any living entity. The living entities are eternally under the subjugation of the Almighty Lord. The Lord makes all the laws and orders, and these laws and orders are generally called dharma or religion. Now this is all coming from kalasya. No one can create any religious formula. Bona fide religion is to abide by the orders of the Lord. Prabhupada's referring to a verse in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam. Here. Dhammam tu shakshat bhagavati pranitam. The Lord's orders are clearly declared in the Bhagavad Gita. Everyone should follow him only, or his orders, and that will make all happy, both materially and spiritually. As long as we are in the material world, our duty is to follow the orders of the Lord, and if by the grace of the Lord we are liberated from the clutches of the material world, then in our liberated stage also we can render transcendental loving service unto the Lord. In our material stage, we can see neither ourselves nor the Lord for want of spiritual vision. But when we are liberated from material affection, and are situated in our original spiritual form, we can see both ourselves and the Lord face to face. Mukti means to be reinstated in one's original spiritual status after giving up the material conception of life. There's another verse from the second canto. Unfortunately, under the influence of illusory material energy, we accept this spot life. Spot life. What does Prabhupada mean by spot life? Spot life. You know what a fly spot is? Anybody know what a fly spot is? Fly poo, basically. Fly spot. And that's what makes me think of spot life. Just, you know, that's it, gone. Of only a few years as our permanent existence, and thus become illusioned by possessing so-called country, home, land, children, wife, community, wealth, etc., which are false Haribol. We haven't seen you for a while, have we? What's he going to do? It's okay. She's not. She seems quite relaxed here. Which are false representations created by Maya, illusion. And under the dictation of Maya, we fight with one another to protect these false possessions. By cultivating spiritual knowledge, we can realize that we have nothing to do with all this material paraphernalia. Then, at once we become free from material attachment. This clearance of the misgivings of material existence at once takes place by association with the Lord's devotees, who are able to inject the transcendental sound into the depths of the bewildered heart and thus make one practically liberated from all lamentation and illusion. That is a summary of the pacifying measures for those affected by the reaction of stringent material laws, exhibited in the forms of birth, death, old age and disease, which are insoluble factors of material existence. The victims of war, namely the family members of the Kurus, were lamenting the problems of death, and the Lord pacified them on the basis of knowledge. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Jaina Tasmaye Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadatitam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lankaya De Gurindya Kupatamam Mande Sri Gurindya Dharaya. Okay, so what are the effects of kalasya that have been felt here? What is the effect that's being felt in this portion of the Bhagavatam? Who can say? Death. Yes, death. Who died? Who died? Who died? Nobody knows who died. Huh? It was a lot of people. Huh? The Kauravas. Yes. You know, practically everybody on the battlefield of Kurukshetra was killed. There were a couple of handfuls of people left. So mass devastation. Mass devastation. And so what happens when somebody dies? We have a party. Well, we may have a party. But generally it's okay, she's all right. She owns the place. How old is she now?
15 months.
She's been hanging around this temple and the temple around for the last couple of years now. So she feels at home here. Pretty amazing, huh? We have a celebration when somebody's born. We also have a celebration when people die. And of course these are the events that are orchestrated by the supreme law of the Almighty, or as it is mentioned here, kalasya, the time factor. So birth, death, old age, disease, all of these, and all of these different changes are taking place and affecting all of us. But especially when there's death, you know, that's a very hard-hitting reminder of the temporality of material existence, and it's very painful. And so the Kauravas are now in a state of shock because so many people have died in the Battle of Kurukshetra. And, you know, what was once a happy family, or at least a fairly, you know, there was politics and intrigue and argument and debate and fighting and so forth. But that's what families do, isn't it? So that was normal, that was okay. But now, as a result of that, of a squabble really, of a family feud, then everybody has been killed. So that must be terribly shocking for all of the members of the family. And you know, most of the family that's left now is what? What is left of the family? One of the things that Arjuna warned against in the first chapter, the end of the first chapter, one of the things that happened.
Huh? Only the ladies are left.
Yes, only the ladies are left. Of course, that wasn't strictly the case, but certainly that's what would have been. The majority of the family that was left would now be the women and children. And who would protect them? Of course, there's Yudhisthira and Arjuna. You know, the Pandavas are there, but still, imagine the devastation of the citizens. Huh? Imagine if we had a fight over who was going to be the temple president, which happens on occasion in ISKCON communities. And as a result of the fight, all the men killed themselves. It wouldn't be very funny, would it? That's kind of what happened. There was a fight over who would be the emperor, and everybody was killed involved in that fighting. So not this, you know, of course we know this is Krishna's, and so, you know, this is kalasya, this is really Krishna's ordination. You know, this is the divine will that all of these things have taken place. But still, it's a very shocking experience. for everybody present. And so, therefore, as a result, there, you know, even the transcendentalists lament the passing of a devotee. We're not feelingless or heartless. Well, we shouldn't be. Maybe on occasion we are, but we shouldn't be. You know, when Ramchandra Puri criticized his guru, Ishvara Puri was his godbrother. You know, he was showing some emotion in relishing the mood of separation that Radharani was experiencing in her abandonment. And then Ramchandra Puri said, you know, what was it? Don't lament Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma na sochati na kanchati. Samasaveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate pranapasa. You know, that is actually the beginning of. But that's a different kind of lamentation. The lamentation of the devotees is the loss of the association of the Vaishnavas or the Vaishnavis. So we're not entirely detached from these things. On the one hand, we know, yes, everything is as adyantavanta kuntaya nateshu ramate buddha. Now, what's the beginning of that verse? Adyanta vanta kunteya. Adi means a beginning, right? And anta means end. So the devotees know everything has a beginning and everything has an end. Adyanta vanta kunteya nateshu ramate buddha. So those who are wise or intelligent, buddha, they don't seek pleasure in those things that are limited and temporary. But at the same time, we value the association of the devotees. Now she has to go outside. Squawking is not allowed in class. What is that? What's the beginning of it? What's that? Yehi samspasa ja bhoga dukkha yonaya evite. Yeah, dukkha. Dukkha. Yehi samspasa ja bhoga. Trying to enjoy the objects of the senses leads to what? Dukkha. Unhappiness. So, there has to be some transcendental vision. There has to be some spiritual understanding. We understand. We know that everything has a beginning and an end, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to be affected by the loss of loved ones. You know, even if our parents, as an example, are not devotees, we'll still miss their. You know, unless our parents are absolute, you know, tyrants, abusers, right? But there's not many people who wouldn't feel some pain of separation if their parents leave. Right? Anybody here who wouldn't feel that about their mum and dad? Parents have to be real rogues. I mean, there are some. You know, a few weeks ago, a man who, you know, put his kid in a clothes dryer and killed him. There are some people who are really low class who can't be parents. But generally speaking, we would feel some, even if our parents are not devotees, but because they looked after us, they nurtured us. You know, they were our original gurus, if you like. They taught us. So we have some affection for them. What to speak of affection for the devotees? But it is inevitable in due course of time that we'll be separated. You know, in the Krishna book, Prabhupada gives the example of the living entities being like flotsam and jetsam on the ocean. And so, you know, we come together on the crest of a wave, and we all, you know, have a good time. But then the wave goes down, and then we're all apart. Then come back up on the top of a wave with another bunch of people. But at that point of separation, you know, the pain is keenly felt. And so at that point in time, that's always a good time to preach, isn't it? I remember some years ago, maybe a decade ago, there was a very tragic situation in a family of our somewhat remote congregation, and the boy in the family, he was 16, 17, final year at high school, quite successful in his study, and family well off, and he's going to a private school, and I think he went on a trip to India, as we do, and he came back with a fever. And the fever just got worse and worse and worse. In fact, I've been in that situation. And you also may have been in that situation. You go to India for a holiday and you come back really sick. And then you go to the doctor here. I remember once going to see Ian Light, who was my doctor then. And I described the symptoms of my ailment. And then he and I were both looking through the textbooks trying to find he didn't have a clue. And it happened to me another time. I came back from Mayapur, and I was so sick. A fever of 41 or whatever it was, and my heart was aching. You know, I was totally sick, and they took me to the Alfred Hospital, and eventually, you know, put me on a drip, and that was the only way to get my temperature down to some, you know, normalcy. And they couldn't tell me what I had. They didn't know. Just, sorry, but we don't know what you've got. We'll try these things. And then as it turned out, you know, they did a blood test, and I said, oh, we think you might have caught, you may have golden staph, you know, which is, you only get it in hospital. You don't get it anywhere else. So, you know, I go to hospital to get cured, and then I'm catching something else. I said, well, now we're going to have to give you all of these penicillin and these heavy antibiotics to get rid of the thing that you picked up in hospital. What was speak of treating the thing that I came in with in the first place. So anyway, this young boy, he died. And the family was just devastated. The community, in the Indian community at that time, they were all devastated because he was a young boy in the prime of his life and gone. And they couldn't do anything. They didn't know what, you know, they knew what was wrong with him. He had a fever, but they couldn't do anything to relieve the symptoms of the fever and to stop him from dying. And the family called us to do some programs, and I think for a few nights we went to their house, had kirtan, and then and they were extremely receptive to the message of the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad philosophy. They were extremely receptive. So at the time of death it's a good time to preach. Because people are renounced at that time. You know, Prabhupada says the spasham vairagya, the renunciation of the funeral gut. Right? After the funeral, then everybody is feeling renounced. Because they just have, you know, they've had everything taken away from them, or they've lost a loved one, so it's very final. But of course, what happens is after a while, people, we forget. Then we go back to life as normal, so-called normal. Life as so-called normal. But So the real enemy, if you like, is this so-called normal existence. Because in that normal existence, as it's explained here, we get caught up in things of the temporal world as if they are real, as if they are permanent. And we see things in a way that basically it's Maya. Maya, that which is not. It doesn't exist. It is all temporary. So Prabhupada says here, was it? Well, main point, as I can work out here, you know, you can, I mentioned this many times, you can usually find out Prabhupada's main point by looking for a few words. But he says, therefore, human life is especially meant for qualifying ourselves for spiritual liberty. This is the real purpose of existence, is to get out of this material conception. But he says here, unfortunately, under the influence of illusory material energy, we accept this spot life of only a few years as our permanent existence. Now, this is one of our problems. I was just thinking about this yesterday. One of our problems is that we don't realize how much Maya we're actually in. We think we're okay. We don't think we're okay. We think we're actually quite advanced. When actually we're steeped in ignorance. This is ignorant, you know, this is ahankara, false identification. We think, I'm a devotee and I'm chanting Hare Krishna, so therefore I must be advanced. Rather than thinking, well, the safe way, or maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but the proper way of thinking is, I'm not advanced, and I'm not. I'm caught up in this illusionary spot life of a few years, thinking it's the all in all, the be all and end all. And illusioned, here Prabhupada says, illusioned by possessing so-called country, home, land, children, wife, community, wealth, etc. Even a sannyasi can become proud of his, or attached to his residence. You know, there's that story of Ramanujacharya who got, what did he do? He got somebody to move all of the Brahmacharis or the sannyasis copins around on the line. Then when they came out, hey, who's moved my copins? Which is fair enough, I guess. You don't really want anybody. But, you know, we become attached to, you know, that which, what is it? Aham mameti. Aham mameti. I and mine. In fact, I think George Harrison wrote a song, or was it John Lennon wrote a song? Around about the time that, in fact, it was at the time that that George Harrison was associating with the devotees. And this is the power of associating with the devotees. You know, when I flew to India, I was looking at the George Harrison movie. If you ever get an opportunity to look at it, maybe for you it's not so relevant, but for those of us who grew up in the 60s with the Beatles, it's interesting. But right at the beginning of the movie, there's a section where George is talking to the lawyers and the people, and they're about to sign the papers which meant the end of the Beatles. And George says words to the effect, he says, "Here I am again, signing a bunch of papers that I've never read, and I don't know what it means." Right? But then as he signs, he goes, "Krishna, Krishna, Krishna." Very interesting. He says, "Krishna, Krishna, Krishna." He's signing, "Krishna, Krishna, Krishna." He mentions it a couple of times. If you don't pay attention, it can easily pass it by, but it's significant. So anyway, at that time, the Beatles did this song called "I Me Mine, I Me Mine, I Me Mine." Right? All over the world, "I Me Mine, I Me Mine, I Me Mine." So that's the mentality of most people, right? Which is "Aham Ameti," I am mine. But we need to be shaken out of that. And Prabhupada mentions here that by cultivating spiritual knowledge, we can realize that we have nothing to do with all this material paraphernalia. We have nothing to do with it, actually. But this is the realization that we should come to. We're custodians in one sense, but it's not ours. It belongs to Krishna. Idam Krishnaya Idam Namama. And you know, there's that line in the wedding ceremony where the groom is given the bride, but then he has to say, you know, "This bride belongs to Prajapati Vishnu, she's not mine actually." Because, you know, the husband's thinking, "Yeah, she's mine now." Mine for my enjoyment. But the warning is no. Not yours. This belongs to... So we have to see that. We have nothing to do with all this material paraphernalia. Now, this clearance, Prabhupada says here, this clearance of the misgivings of material existence at once takes place by association with the Lord's devotees. So we see that, you know, when we come in the association of the devotees, then we're usually very often in a bewildered state. And we see here, you know, the sages and Krishna are relieving the Kauravas and the Pandavas of their lamentation by giving them transcendental knowledge, by speaking to them. And we experience that. When we come into the association of devotees, then you see it. A person can be very quickly transformed from a mood of lamentation and bewilderment into a state of exuberant fervour in devotional service. Right? You see, sometimes when we come to devotional service and we're morose and bewildered. But then in the association of the devotees, we hear transcendental knowledge, and we engage in devotional service, and then all of a sudden we're fired up. Super devotees. Right? It's even in the Madhurya Kadambini, it's described as utsahatmayi. One becomes enthusiastic. Puffed up with enthusiasm. But that's the power. The power of the association of the devotees is such that by hearing the transcendental message, then that ignorance, that lamentation, that bewilderment can easily be removed. And then one has disdain for things material. utsaha mai, puffed up with enthusiasm. Of course, also in an immature devotee, the materialism can come back very quickly too. Huh? So, you know, one day we're really fired up, but then the next day, life is too hard, I can't do it. It's easy to become bewildered again. Another reason why it's recommended that we stay in the association of the devotees. So in order to put the spot life into perspective, instead of thinking, you know, our existence is the be-all and end-all of everything, we need the association of the devotees. Because in the association of devotees, what happens? What happens in the association of the devotees? Matschita matkata prana bodhayanta parasparam katyantascha mam nityantascanti charamanti cha. The extraordinary feature or characteristic of devotee association is that we will always be hearing about Krishna, thinking about matschita, thinking about Krishna, matkata prana, working for Krishna. Padayanta parasparam, using our intelligence to serve. Katayantascha mam nityam, always talking. Kata. Katayantascha mam nityam. Tusyanti cha ramanti cha. That's where the devotees get their pleasure and their satisfaction and their nourishment. We're able to overcome the difficulties of material existence by regularly hearing about Krishna. So that by regularly hearing, then this bewilderment is easily dissipated. Therefore, the importance of associating with the devotees. If we associate with the non-devotees, what happens? I can't hear. Yeah, and how? You get contaminated. How? By hearing prajalpa. What will you hear about? When you go to work, what do you hear about?
Footy.
The footy. Yeah. Last season it was the cricket. Now it's the footy. Amongst other things. The economy. How much is your health worth? What about your motor car? You know, it's all just mundane. Grum, it's described. Grum kata.
Planning for the future.
Yeah, planning for the future. But now, look, as devotees, that doesn't mean we don't plan for the future. And I know that you plan for the future. Mr. Renunciation. Yeah, he's a wily businessman. Right? So he's always thinking about the future. But he's doing it for Krishna. There's a difference. But at the same time, we also have to be detached, because we won't be doing it for Krishna all the time, at least in this body. So there's, isn't it interesting? You know, on the one hand, we are attached, but on the other hand, we have to be detached. Isn't it? Right? But, you know, Prabhupada gave the example to the devotees of, you know, the watch. And he's saying, you know, we're detached. You know, it's just a material possession. So we're not that attached to it, but if you try to take it, I'll fight you for it. Right? Because I'm using it for Krishna. So it has its value while I'm using it for Krishna. I'm not so detached, you can just take it. I say, oh, it's okay, not mine. You know, I'm transcendental. We are transcendental, knowing that things will come and go, but at the same time, we'll fight tenaciously to use it for Krishna. Because that's the proper utilization of things. So that's why the character of a devotee is quite bewildering for materialistic people. Just as, you know, Madhavendra Puri's lamentation was bewildering for Ramchandra Puri. You know, we're transcendentalists. And so we encourage detachment. But, you know, we work hard to make money for Krishna. We put money in the bank. Just when people look at us, they say, you know, we had our strategic planning weekend the other weekend, and we were just looking at money half the time, looking at our financial reports. So, you know, we're doing that because we're attached. Yes, we are attached, but why are we doing it? For ourselves? No, it's being done for Krishna. So that disconnect from the material needs to be done appropriately, so that that disconnection is in the understanding, I can't hang on to things forever. And so when they're taken away, I have to accept that as Krishna's arrangement, this kalasya, inevitable, the inevitable separation caused by the time factor. But at the same time, that doesn't mean I just give up everything and stop my service, because life from time to time becomes too hard. But rather we have to then see everything in a proper perspective. You know, there will be some lamentation and some disruption to our service if we experience some bereavement. That's natural. But then after the natural process of what do we call it? Bereavement is passed, then we get to go on and do our service with that transcendental knowledge. We know that we'll be separated. The pain of separation is acute, and we can remember the persons who have departed. That's appropriate. That's why we have the ceremonies and so forth. That's the whole part of life. But then we should remember, but we're not the body. We're spiritual, we're servants of Krishna. And so let us now move on. Let's now again reconnect with Krishna, understanding the laws of nature and their inevitable passing. The inevitable passing of time brings about separation. But then let's again reconnect with Krishna. And by talking about Krishna, by thinking of Krishna, by rendering service to Krishna, even though we're in separation, actually that service, and this is important, our key platform of our philosophy is Vipralamba Seva, which means that even though we're in separation, if we remember Krishna, talk about Krishna, serve Krishna, then actually we're connected again with him. So there's no separation. That was the mood of the gopis, who are the exemplars. Even though they're in separation from Krishna and lamenting that they've lost, still they're actually with Krishna. So that needs to be reminded. We need to be reminded of our relationship with the Lord and not get caught up in the interminable, you know, bondage of material attachment to these things that Prabhupada mentions here. And that's the purpose of the human form of life. Country, whether it be India or Australia, or what have we got here, Russia, China, Chile, Argentina, what else have we got here? Britain. What part of England are you from, Stumblebumble? Where's that?
West of London.
West of London. What's that area?
Berkshire.
Berkshire. Yeah, anyway, we're not the body. Country, home, land, children, wife, community, wealth, etc. False representations created by Maya. And yet we have to deal with these things. That's a real, it's a challenge for us. We've got to be detached from it, but deal with it in a Krishna conscious way. So that when we are separated from it, our use of it in Krishna's service means that we don't have to come back again for another birth. And that's done with the assistance of the sadhus, the saintly persons, which is mentioned here. Santvayam ashamuni bhir. Pacified by the Moonies. Or actually, what it means is that Krishna is pacifying all of the devotees. Santvayama Shamuni here with the assistance of the Moonies and the sages. So, this association of the devotees is very powerful. Just like that family, when they lost their son, then the first thing they did was call the devotees, come and give us some relief from our separation, pain and anguish of separation. And then, interesting point here. Immediately, as soon as we hear the instructions from the devotees, then immediately this ignorance can be dissipated. Very powerful. Which is why we're recommended, Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya. To regularly serve the devotees, to regularly serve the Bhagavatam by hearing. By rendering a service, the affinity or the attraction for hearing increases within the heart, mentioned in the Bhagavatam. By rendering service, then our desire to hear increases. And our hearing then increases the desire to serve. So it builds. And that then helps us clear the ignorance, the confusion. And we're encouraged to do that on a regular basis because, we get covered over. Every night when we go to sleep, we forget ourselves, basically. Right? Go to sleep and then you dream. And whatever we're dreaming, we think it's real. Right? Then we wake up and then we accept the new a daydream as being real. Which is why, in the morning we have to wake up, get up early, perform the Mangal Aarti, offer prayers to the spiritual master, chant Hare Krishna, render service to remind ourselves again, I'm a servant of Krishna, I'm not, whatever it was that I was floating around in my bed thinking that I am. But which we're totally absorbed in. I woke up this morning dreaming that I was in an aeroplane with Dhritaraj and we were enjoying the comfort of the seats. Yeah, not bad. Then I woke up. I'm not in an aeroplane. I'm not with Dhritaraj. I need to go to the bathroom. So we go to sleep and we forget who we are. So we have to wake up again and we have to be reminded. I'm not this body. I'm a servant of Krishna. Time to go and do my bhajan. To remind myself of who I am. And that's why we have the association of the devotees. Because the devotees will remind us who we are. What our purpose is. Our purpose is to serve Krishna. And to serve the devotees. Actually, we serve Krishna by serving the devotees. We perfect our lives by inquiry, and the inquiry should be, as Prabhupada said actually, when he said he only had one question of his Guru Maharaj, and you know what that question was? How can I serve you? That's the question that we should be asking. Ultimately, if we distill all of our questioning down, then that's the final question that we should be asking. How can I serve you? All other questions will lead to that point. Why is that? Does anybody know why it comes to the point of service? Why does it come to the point of service? Think 434. Just to give you a hint. guess.
Because we get knowledge for service.
Sorry?
My servant will be understanding.
Yes, we'll get knowledge. Yeah. Tadviti pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadik shanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadashanaha. That's how you see the truth. It's by doing service. That's why we inquire from the tatvadashi, those who see truth. Krishna reveals himself. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam puti purvakam dadame puti jogam tam jainamam. So I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. So that's the question that we should be asking the devotees. How can I serve you? What we tend to do is tell them, here's how I'm going to serve you. That's what we do. I'm a great devotee and here's how I'm going to render service to you. But the question should be, how do you want me to serve? Be attentive to what the devotees want, and then we'll also be attentive to what Krishna wants. And that's not so easy, that's not an easy thing. But if we serve Krishna the way Krishna's devotees want, then Krishna will reciprocate with us many, many more times than if we serve him just the way we want. It's harder to do. It's a lot harder to do. Because it means we give up what we think is right and we take on that which pleases others. But interestingly enough, if we serve Krishna according to the way that Krishna's devotees want, that's what Krishna wants. And so he reciprocates with us even more. Why the association of the devotees is so important, as is exemplified in it. Because, you know, by hearing from them and by serving them, one can ameliorate all of the pain and suffering of material existence, as has been, as is exemplified here. And that's done through service. In this case, the service is hearing. That's the devotional service begins with hearing, actually. What is it? Shravanadi sutta chitte. Our consciousness is purified by the process of bhakti, which begins with shravanam, hearing. Yeah. Does anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points?
Lord Ramchandra.
Well, I didn't even mention Lord Ramchandra. I said any questions about this particular point, any of these points. Ramchandra's tonight. We'll talk about Ramchandra tonight. And what was your question?
Which yoga here?
I'll find out and I'll let you know. You can go look that up in a book. You don't need to ask me. No, seriously. It's okay to inquire, but we should inquire pertinently. Somebody gives a class about a topic, you don't then ask a question about something different. There's another devotee who's not here now who's sometimes good at doing that. You know, just for the sake of asking questions. But the question should be relevant and pertinent. Otherwise it's kind of, you know, it's a little bit rude. Because it means you just ignored everything that person said for the last hour. And I know that you didn't mean that, but that's could be misconstrued as... And of course, it could also be misconstrued. You say, well, look at Lord Ramchandra's appearance today. How come you're not speaking about him? But we will tonight, so don't worry. There's a method to our madness. Janishwara, Jalut.
You mentioned that devotees are attached So we get the important relationship with Krishna. Or
yes.
The protector that he has. That way. They're attached to the material of hands, we give example. But at the same time they're detached because it is in relationship with Krishna.
Yes.
Now what happens if this mood continues? They may be they are still continuing some unattached to the material things. And Lord Krishna says Yamya Mavis Mavam. If they think the body in that consciousness, is it that understood that they are attached to Krishna or the material things?
So for example, you're attached to your son. Sons. Right? So what happens at the time of death when you think of your sons? Is that an example of what you're saying? Yes. So what happens? If he's attached to his sons and he leaves his body, what happens? Where does he go? Yum yum. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavan. Whatever you think of at the time of jantanti kalivaram. At the time of death, if you're thinking of your sons, this is a good reason why you should, why we have a gurukul. Well, we don't have a gurukul, but why we train our children to be devotees. Because if we're thinking of our sons and daughters at the time of death, if they're devotees, then that's good. Isn't it? But also it might not be good. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, the Vedic system is quite rigorous in that we're recommended at a certain point in time is to leave the family. Right? Leave home. What's the saying? Panchasodvam vanam prajet. You know, at 50, go to the forest. How old are you now? Yeah. You know, when I first, you've got to be careful about this one. When I was a very young devotee and, you know, visiting my parents, and I would say, you know, at 50, you know, you've got to be renounced. Blah, blah, blah. So when I turned 50, then my mum said to me, are you going to leave Achintaroopa now at 50? So you've got to be careful about quoting Vedic aphorisms too enthusiastically, because you might have to put them into practice. Huh? There's no forest. The forest of Tarnate or Truganina or wherever you happen to live. But still, it's, you know, so there's the four stages of sannyas. What is it? Kutuchak, Bahutat, Parirajikacharya, and Paramahamsa. Right? Kutuchak means he lives in his kutia, away from the family. And the family may bring some, the wife may bring some prasadam. The good thing about the Melbourne community is that, you know, if your wife is not here, there's always about a half a dozen householders that you can go and knock on the door. Which is the next stage, Bahudak, Madukari. Right? So that he becomes more renounced and he can go from door to door and beg some alms. And that way he'll get his meals. So then the dependence on the family becomes less. Right? You're dependent on your wife for prasadam, right? Or do you cook? Who cooks?
She cooks.
So we become dependent. But you know, the idea is to break that dependent. We become attached to our children and we think, you know, at the time of death my children will look after me. And in fact, you know, that's a mentality that's prevalent in Indian culture. It's why you have to have children, because they're your insurance policy. Isn't it? Otherwise, well, who's going to look after you? So, But of course, you know, in a devotee community, then in order to break that attachment, we can live separately and so bahudaki, madhukari, goes and gets a little bit from everybody. And then in the process of doing that, the idea is that one becomes detached and realizes that Krishna ultimately will look after us. But that's not so easy, actually. That's really hard. But, you know, at 50, I have to leave my wife. Well, you can see I didn't do it. And, you know, when I come home, I'm looking for my dinner. As you are too. You know, they say a way to the man's heart is through his stomach. So, so what to do? What to do? How do we develop that detachment? Because there's a good chance if we're too attached, then, you know, you'll think of your wife's cooking at the time of death. That may not be what you should be doing. Of course, it's, you know, if it's prasad, and that's different. It's so that's why the Vedic culture encourages renunciation, you know, at a later stage of life and a separation. So that one can develop that understanding that it's not your wife, but actually it's Krishna. It's not your children, it's Krishna. They may be the agents of Krishna, but ultimately it's Krishna. But because we can become attached to those things sentimentally, then it's recommended that we have some separation. Right? But obviously there's going to be benefit if our family members are devotees, then we'll be thinking of the devotees. So it's not, you know, it's not so cut and dried. It's not so cut and dried. And you know, our renunciation shouldn't be harsh and cruel. Do you know what I mean? Although sometimes it is. We're seeing here the death of all of these people on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. That's not, that's harsh and that's cruel. And life is like that. So we need to be prepared for that. Anybody got any comments on this point? What's that?
I've got a question.
A caution or a question? A question.
Stringent laws of Almighty. So,
yeah.
I mean, why Krishna arranged this jesting war to explain the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita? I mean, to explain that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
You think he's cruel?
No, but the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's way of preaching was a different way. More
adjustable. So Krishna's preaching wasn't good. Huh? Too harsh.
Too heavy.
Paritranaya yusadu nam vinashaya chatuskritam. See, Krishna has a kshatriya spirit. Right? He is a fighting spirit. You see that in Nrisimhadev, right? You see it in Varaha. Is that right? Not Varaha. Varaha Dev, right? Who else? Ramchandra. Who amongst the incarnations doesn't like to have a good fight? Who is there? Yeah, Ramana Dev, but even then he pinched stuff off of Balina. he took it anyway. But so if Krishna likes to have a good fight, then have a guess what happens? What happens when there's a fight? Yeah, somebody gets killed. And it's not Krishna. It's the bad guys. They end up with a bashed in skull. So I don't know. I think it's part of existence, isn't it? And he's as a Kshatriya, he came to Dharma Samsthapanataya. He came to establish religion, religious principles. And in that case, it meant the battle of Kurukshetra. It meant fighting. Parasuram is another example, right? So this is not unusual, actually. Lord Chaitanya is the exception, almost, in one sense, right? Because of the state of Kali, he couldn't just kill it, because as Lord Nityananda pointed out, when he was going to kill Jagai Madai, he said, if you kill Jagai Madai, you're going to have to kill everybody else, because they're all so bad in Kali. So this age requires a special treatment, special consideration. But yeah, I don't think we should shy away from the tough or the difficult or the violent even in devotional service, because, you know, or the effort that's required in performing devotional service, thinking that, you know, it's not sattvic, it's not pure, it's not... In fact, actually, this whole idea of, you know, oh, it's fighting, so therefore it's bad, is wrong. Right? And, you know, that, oh, too much activity in devotional service means it's in the mode of passion. And no, that's nonsense. We could say that Arjuna was in the mode of passion. Right? Just on that point. And so therefore he's in Maya. Right? Too much action, too much passion, killing all these people. That's not devotional service. Of course it's devotional service. Krishna's intelligent. Kill him. So we shouldn't shy away from the fact that Krishna likes a good bloody fight. With lots of heads bashed in. And bodies just... Can you imagine the landscape of the Battle of Kurukshetra? It was just strewn with bodies. It was said that there were rivers of blood. Right? And it was like, Krishna, what are you doing that for? That's a bit extreme, isn't it? Peace, man. We're not into peace at all. Actually, we're into a good fight, a good struggle. You know, when Mr. Nair died, Prabhupada said, words to the effect, you know, that was a good fight. So we don't want to fight for Krishna. Or we should. You know, we should. If there's a need to fight or even to do some trickery for Krishna, we'll do it. Right? What happened to Yudhishthira? He wouldn't tell a lie. Right? This is so much for Dharma, right? Yudhishthira wouldn't tell a lie. And so, you know, he lost his piety as a result of not following Krishna's instructions to tell a little bit of a fib. Isn't it? That's the lesson. So we have to be careful about, you know, seeing Krishna's actions as being material, basically. We have to see them as purely spiritual. The activities of the Vaishnavas and the devotees as being spiritual. And make sure that our activities are spiritual. And so it's not so much the action, but it's the motivation, it's the mood behind the activity that makes devotional service. And that's what we've got to look at. To recognize a devotee, we have to see, you know, in the Harinam Chintamani, what's the first offense in chanting Hare Krishna? What's the first offense? Blaspheming the devotees, right. So the first thing that Haridas Thakur talks about, or is who is a devotee. We have to be able to recognize who is a devotee. And so, you know, we come in the temple and we see this guy just sweeping the courtyard. We think, no, he's just sweeping the courtyard. Yeah. Yeah. This would happen to a Chintarupa a lot. You know, she always used to sweep the courtyard. Finally, somebody stole the surface off of her. Not without a fight, mind you. But people would come along and they'd just disregard it. Oh, there's just some Indian lady sweeping the courtyard. In fact, there was one devotee who got in an argument with her, which I can suggest is a mistake. But then later on, somebody said to him, "That's the temple president's wife." So, you know, you have to be, you know, we can't judge the devotee by the external coverings of what they're doing and think, oh, just a person cleaning the courtyard. Because cleaning the courtyard in Krishna's temple, that's the same thing that Rukmini's doing in her palace, and the place is not even dirty. Right? It's not even dirty. So we have to be careful about thinking about the devotees, looking at from the external, looking at Krishna's, oh, look at all these people killed. Oh, that's not good. That's why Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita. Why there was, the Battle of Kurukshetra is there, so that we can understand the purport of all of these activities, all of these circumstances, and understand the relevance of them. This isn't just an ordinary battlefield. This is a holy, sacred place. Isn't that amazing? The place that millions of people died is a sacred place, isn't it? Kurukshetra. We go to Kurukshetra for our purification. There's the gut, or the lake of Brahma, isn't it? Or is it called Brahmakund? What's it called? There's a big Brahmsarovar. Yeah. So you go there and take bath, you go to Kurukshetra. You know, ISKCON's got a property right next to the place where they say Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita. Right next. Right. Couldn't have a better spot. Anybody been to Kurukshetra?
Yes.
ISKCON? Yes. Yeah, you've been there too. The North Indian Wallahs. They've been there. It's a very nice place. So we go there to take a bath, but that's a place where Krishna instructed Arjuna to kill millions of people. But we go there for our purification. We're not thinking, oh, this is a horrible place. All these people got killed here on nasty Krishna's instructions. Because we know the purport of the Bhagavad Gita. We know the purpose. We know the purpose for which Krishna instigated, and he didn't actually instigate the war, but that was because of Dhritarashtra and his foolishness, and Duryodhana. They're the ones who wanted to fight. The Pandavas tried their best to avoid it as much as possible. Krishna tried to negotiate. He tried all of his conflict resolution skills, but they were determined.
5 billion.
Huh?
He asked only 5 billion.
Yeah. Did Arjuna, or was it Yudhishthira, say, just give us 5 villages, we'll be happy. Because, you know, Duryodhana knew that if they got 5 villages, they would take more eventually. But yeah, we have to look at the purpose which is being served behind the actions of Krishna and the devotees. Then we can understand. But it is said, it's very difficult to understand the mood of a Vaishnava. Right? So therefore, what do we do? In order to understand the mood of a Vaishnava, what do? Yeah, ask them questions. How can I serve you? Then we can get to know them. And we can know Krishna too, then as a result. Anything else? There's no breakfast this morning. That's right. I didn't say spiritual master because, you know, very often we don't serve our spiritual master directly. And I meant that deliberately because very often we serve the devotees. That's how we serve our guru. We get this idea, you know, that we have to serve the guru directly, but actually we serve Krishna. We don't. How often do we serve Krishna directly? How often?
Yeah. Always through the guru.
What's that?
Always through the Vaishnava. Always through the guru.
Always. Ooh, there we go. It's the voice of authority has spoken. Yeah, always through the guru. And you, often, where's the guru? So how do you serve the guru? How do you serve your guru?
Follow
his instructions. Yeah. That's why Prabhupada says Vani is more important than Vapu. We get the Vapu so then we can do the personal service. That's nice. And of course we should do that. But most often we serve Krishna and our spiritual master, the initiating spiritual master, through the Vaishnavas. And so what we have to do is, and I'm quite strong on this point, you know, very often we have to see that there's more than one guru. In the Mangalacharanam, what do we say? Vande Guru. Vandeham Sri Guru. It's not guru, it's gurus plural. At the beginning of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Vande Gurun, Isha Bhaktans, Isha Vatarakam. So, you know, well, who's the Chaitanya? Krishna Das Kaviraj pays his obeisances to Vande Gurun. It's plural gurus. So we have our initiating guru, but we also have and often more prominent and more association with other people who train us or who we serve. Huh? And so that, you know, that, and even, you know, even we may be serving devotees who are less advanced than ourselves. Right, this is why the, you know, Prabhupada was asked about the Varnashram system, and he mentions the Brahmas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, you know, four classes. Then he was asked, well, which class are you? And Prabhupada says, I'm fifth class. And why is that? He said, because I'm the servant of all of the other Varnas and Ashrams. So, you know, and Prabhupada said, you know, but just my disciples are like my guru. Right? They teach me. So, you know, sometimes we may be even serving people who are less advanced than ourselves, but we learn more from them. Do you know what I mean? Just like you serve your son. They're teaching you how to be a good father. Right? And sometimes we may even fail a test. Right? Get angry with them and clip them in the ears. Do you do that? Occasionally. Hardly at all. So, service to the guru, we have to see that the guru manifests in so many different ways. So many ways. And we have to be attentive to the details in serving each of those manifestations. What was the question again? Yeah, service. Yeah, you know, service to the devotees is no simple thing. You know, like being a servant of your children, sometimes you have to get angry. You know? Prabhupada would get angry with his disciples. Blisteringly angry. You know, they would all run away. None of them would want to come and talk to him. Because they did something really, really, really stupid. And Prabhupada would get angry. But then afterwards he'd say, look, don't mind, I'm sorry, you know, I have to, in order to make you a good disciple, I have to chastise you. Just like, if you want to make your son a good son, and you've got two sons, you have to chastise them, right? Not that, oh, anything, it's okay, just go and play on the road. Drink the Dettol under the sink, no problem, till we go. Do what you like. Yeah, you have to... So your child actually has to be scared of you. You know? That's good. Dhruv, are you scared of your Prabhu? No. Uh-oh. Scared of mummy? No? He's not so sure about that. No, isn't that interesting? You know, on the one hand, the child has to be very, very respectful of the father, but at the same time, he has to have a loving friendship. Right? So, you know, you've got to be tough, but loving. So sometimes, you know, if you're in a... And that's a parental role. Parent, teacher, king, you know, these are roles where they have to see that citizens and their students as if they were their own children, but at the same time they have to be prepared to pick up a stick and say, oh! Right? So there's that kind of a service, but then and that's why it's tricky. That's why, you know, when we see Krishna fighting on the battlefield, we can say, hey, what are you fighting for? Because that stick is required, and in fact actually it's a sign of affection. So you know, on the one hand, we're humble and we're servants, but that service may mean being assertive on occasion. Right? Now, the advancement of a devotee is to know when that's appropriate and when not. Right? And being able to recognize that in a person. So that when we see in Prabhupada's angry and chastises his disciple, we see that as appropriate. Because normally when we see somebody lose it, we say, oh, he lost it. And that's not considered to be a good quality. But if we see that quality in a Vaishnava, and that Vaishnava is chastising somebody, just like Lord Chaitanya, is glorified for wanting to kill Jagai and Madai, but not, right, then we can appreciate that's transcendental. So maintaining that mood of service throughout all of those requirements in the association of the devotees it requires a lot of sincerity and a lot of deep, you know, introspection, deep realization actually. So how do you do that? How do you do it? Practice. Yeah, we're practicing. You know, there was the example, we're all like gems. All of the devotees are like gems, but we have our rough edges, right? So, do you know how they polish gems? You get a bucket of gems, throw them into a concrete mixer, slosh it up with water, and then switch it on, and let it roll around and around and around. And all of the gems banging into each other polish them. So eventually, you know, they've got some rough edges by the time they've been rolled around for 24 hours. They come all out smooth and shiny. So what Krishna's done is he's created the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He's thrown us all in. Poured in a bit of water, turned on the button, and then we all bang into each other. And that's how we become purified. By banging our rough edges off against each other. So don't mind, you know, if I bang into you occasionally. It's for your purification. And mine. We're all brought together and bang, 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 bang. I think, what's wrong with that guy? And you know, there are some people who even my friends say, why do you tolerate this fellow for? And I just think that person is my humility guru, and I have to accept that. You know, we have to accept, our philosophy is that we accept what we get as what we deserve. Right? I live it up, and we can live it up with other devotees if we deserve protection, or, you know, or need protect. Yeah, if we deserve protection from somebody, then the other devotees will come and help us. They'll protect us. Okay. Joy. Oh, I've got some announcements. Yeah, Joy.
Prabhupada, as you mentioned, any time, any given time, we can get driven away from your service.
Driven away.
And,
I would hope not, but yes.
That's why we need association.
Yes.
But you see, even you are living with devotees, but someone can stop the devotional service and go out.
Yeah.
And in some cases, they end up blaming devotees for their reason. The question becomes, what exactly does association mean?
Well, nobody gives up devotional service. They might have a temporary holiday, but, you know, Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavatam that, and we know this, that that person never forgets Krishna. You know, once you've had the association of the devotees and once you've tasted the rasa or the relish of service, you cannot forget it. And we know from talking to devotees who have left ISKCON how they'd say, you know, I couldn't forget. There wasn't a day passed when I didn't think of Krishna and the devotees and lament that I lost that association. So, you know, sometimes a person may be offensive and, you know, as a result of their offensive mentality, then Krishna removes them from the association of the devotees. That's usually for their protection and to protect the devotees. You know, there may be external reasons why. Maybe some external, you know, and they blame the devotees, but and that can be the case, you know, and certainly in years gone by that might have been the case, but on the whole, I think certainly in this community, the devotees, I don't think, can be blamed for somebody's not. And, you know, I can think of a few people, but it's a small number of people who leave the association of the devotees and don't do any service whatsoever. There's not that many, unless I'm wrong. Can you? Well, it's probably not good to mention names in any case, but you know, on the whole. Any comments? Anybody like to make a comment on that point? Who have we driven away recently? Anybody? Yeah, you know someone?
Well, I was thinking that Tamalakant Maharaj was mentioning a similar point. That everybody was the Dhamma initiated to get him from Dhamma when Maharaj was as temple president.
Which is quite a while ago, but yeah, go on.
Because then he after so many years when Maharaj was passing by a tunnel,
underestimate the potency of devotional service. That's why we're here. Why are we here? Because we like doing what we're doing. We get a rasa, a taste. You can only get that in the association of devotees. You know, it's hard to get it by yourself.
Just a small comment on Jagadish's question.
Yeah.
They leave, even though they're in association with devotees, maybe because their sadhana is weak and maybe it burns out with too much work. I don't know. They don't have enough time to think about the sadhana.
Yep.
They don't, also, their emotional needs, you know, people need to be acknowledged and they like to.
Love.
Some people like, yeah.
Love. We like to be loved.
Yes, yeah, so sometimes their emotional needs are not met.
Yep. I haven't seen that happen recently, though. To be honest.
As a community. Every
yeah.
community.
Yeah. As a community?
As a community, because there's families, there's people, we're not. Mahabhagavats yet, so we still have conditioning. And
yeah, we need those things. That's why community development is all about accepting everybody, even the whackers, even the ning-nongs. Because right? As soon as you start driving people away, whew, it may be you next. Don't drive people away. Because, you know, it may be you that gets driven out. And I have to admit I've done some pretty nasty things as the devotee. There was one devotee who left, and it wasn't only my fault because he was having difficulties in any case, but I remember once, and this is, I mean, maybe I shouldn't even tell the story because it just illustrates how stupid I was, how neophyte, but it's not a... We were traveling Sankirtan. He was having a lot of difficulty. It was hard. It was really hard. We were in Tasmania, living in a combi van and staying in caravan parks. And we were away from the temple for the Christmas marathon and maybe for a couple of months away from the temple. And it was at the end of the marathon and we were working, I don't know, it wouldn't have been a couple of months, but at least a month away. And I was a devotee of maybe 2 years old. So not at all advanced, although I thought it was pretty advanced. And Grabeshwar he left, actually. I gave him such a hard time. He wasn't chanting his rounds and he wasn't doing his service. And, you know, and I needed somebody also to keep fired up. And he wasn't. And he said, I'm leaving. I remember we had an argument over something stupid, I suppose. And he said, I'm leaving. And I said, all right, leave. And then he got his stuff. And I said, hang on a second, you can't take that. That belongs to Krishna. So I took his clothes and everything off him and put it in the back of the van. I drove off and just left him. This was in Hobart. And it was the last day of the Christmas marathon. You know, so we were tired, exhausted, fried, you know, everything that you could not want to be, I suppose, and, you know, sucked down in Tassie. And I had to get back to Burnie, Devonport, to catch the ferry to come home on Christmas Eve, I think it was. And I remember driving all the way from Hobart to Burnie and Devonport, and then just at the turn off to get in to drive into where you loaded, he was there waiting for me. So I thought, oh wow, phew, Krishna's management. But anyway, yeah, it was a nasty thing to do. I took everything off him. I said, you can't have that. That belongs to Krishna. I want to take it off him. The clothes off his back and just left him walk down the road with that clothes on. If you took that philosophy to the limits. And he was having difficulty. He joined about the same time as me, him and his girlfriend. And his girlfriend still is a very close friend of my wife. I don't know what happened to him though. He eventually left. It's just too hard for him. But we did make it easy for people who had a tough time in those days. But this, you know, now in my mellow middle age, I'd be a bit more easygoing with people. But then here's what happens, you know. Somebody's not tying the line. You know, one of the brahmacharis is not tying the line. Then the other brahmacharis will say, he's not tying the line. You've got to do something about it. My tendency these days will be, give him a break. Let him go. Take it easy. Because we know. What is it? Neha bikrama nasos di pratyavayoruna vidyate. Little bit of advancement is of the greatest benefit. So we want to encourage people as much as possible. So it's a bit of a fine line between the standards, you know, the best standard, and just giving somebody an opportunity to engage in service. And then they'll come up with the standard gradually, by inspiration, rather than us bashing them into submission. Surrender. Surrender to Krishna, you demon. When actually what it is surrender to me. I'm Krishna's exalted representative. And this is going to be good for you. Pride. Krishna doesn't like pride in a devotee. So what happens is, if we're too proud and we lord it over the others, then you can bet your bottom dollar that sooner or later it's going to come around and crunch you. Enough? So watch out. Don't be too heavy on the others, because it'll be turning around and bang back on you. It's okay to be heavy on your children, though. That's all right. But here's what happens, Jonas, right? You think of your kids at the time of death, then you become their children. And they give it to you. Well, maybe not. It'll be maybe different. Maybe not. You won't be your children's children, because you'll be alive still. But you'll get it. That's what happens. Now, Jabhataka Maharaj once said to me, he said, we were talking about the Gurukul in Mayapur, and he said, we better get this place right, because, you know, next lifetime we'll be coming back and going to this school. So we better make sure that everything's working properly. All right, there's a couple of announcements, and please pass these messages on. Tonight is Ram Navami. It's also Sunday, I don't know if you noticed. There'll be a lot of people here. The Abhishek starts at 5:45, and we want to finish it around about 7 o'clock, I think, isn't it? Or 6:15. Yeah, sunset time, okay, right. Yeah, so the feast will be served at 6:15. Is it 5:45? That's half an hour for the Abhishek. Won't finish, but anyway, we can start serving. But especially for the devotees, please don't jump the prasadam queue. You know, it is terribly bad manners to just push in front of all the guests. Isn't it? You don't invite people to your house for a meal and then elbow them out of the way. You know, when you invite people to your house, I know, none of you eat until after I've eaten. So why are we pushing here at the temple? It's not culture. So, you know, and if you see other devotees do it, don't mind, tell them. You know, don't push in. It's so uncultured. Not what we should be doing as Vaishnavas. You know. We'll also have the staunchions up. So there'll have to be some crowd flow for the Abhishek. Which means, you know, if you're in the temple room, then okay, but otherwise you have to go around and have darshan. It's kind of clunky, quirky way of doing things, but it's what have we got? We're going to have hundreds of people here, and otherwise the temple room will just be jam-packed full of people and it won't work. So can you keep that in mind? And also, the 6th of April, which is Good Friday, is the 40th anniversary of the installation of Little Radha and Krishna here in Melbourne. So we're not going to do a huge big thing because it's it's a bit much, I suppose. We're going to have our 40th anniversary celebrations in 2015 when that's the celebration of Gaur Nitai's installation and the opening of this temple. And that's when we'll do the mega production and get Coleman to come and arrange everything and invite Prabhupada's disciples. And it'll be last year was the 40th anniversary of Radha Gopinath's installation. So, we could have a big festival this year. We could have another one next year because next year is the 40th anniversary of the installation of Radha Balaba. Right? But we'll have our big one in 2015 and invite everybody. But for this year, for Little Radha and Krishna, what we're thinking of doing, it's Good Friday. Actually, the Tithi falls on the 13th, which is Friday the 13th, the week after. But because it's Good Friday and we'll be on holidays, what we'll do is we'll have an Abhishek of Little Radha and Krishna in the morning as part of the morning program. And then we can have a brunch afterwards. A ginger rupa's hot cross buns. But don't tell anybody, okay? In fact, we're going to count how many people go out of the room. If there's any more, we won't let them in. What do you reckon? So keep that in mind. Next Friday, it's a holiday. And so to commemorate the installation of Little Radha and Krishna, we'll have a little Abhishek here in the morning. I'm not sure even if we'll have a class. In fact, we might just have a big kirtan and an Abhishek. Maybe some reading from the Great Transcendental Adventure or something like that. Something simple. Yes, Joy.
Some devotees are asking when we have book distribution picnic.
The book distribution picnic? it won't be next Friday. But that's a good question. We'll work out that date this week. Yeah. You know, we had the strategic planning retreat, then we had... I had... Gunamani's wedding, plus Compass was here doing all that filming. At least for me, I was just... Last weekend, I was just flat out. This weekend... We could have had it yesterday, couldn't we? No, because... We had Atul here doing the teacher training and stuff. Next weekend we've got Narayani here, but we could do it. We could have done it next weekend. I'll have a chat with the powers that be and see. The other factor is that the Chintaroop has got a very bad back at the moment. So maybe not next weekend, but we will announce the date. The weekend after that is Bhujan Prabhu Jagatarini's retreat. So maybe then after that. The problem with the Melbourne temple is there's always something going on. So, you know, the next thing we'll know, it'll be the book distribution marathon have started again. What was that? I remember.
Very big picnic before that.
Yes. Yeah, we'll have the pre-book distribution. In lieu of the fact that we didn't have the post book distribution picnic. How many people here went out on book distribution in the marathon last year? Well, it's only going to be a few people who are going. Little Radha and Krishna? I think Little Radha and Krishna were originally worshipped by Upendra and Chitralekha. I can ask Chitralekha. I might write to her and ask her. She can tell some. She told some stories when she was here, didn't she? About the installation of Little Radha and Krishna. I'll find out. Do some research. We'll find out. We can tell the story next week. But it was Prabhupada who installed Little Radha and Krishna. Yeah, Little Radha and Krishna. In Burnett Street. Radha Balava in Burnett Street. There's only been two temples in Melbourne. Burnett Street and, well, three, you could say three, I mean. There was a preaching centre in Lygon Street. No, not Lygon. Lonsdale Street in the city. And then then the Burnett Street Temple, and then eventually here. Little Radha and Krishna were installed by Prabhupada on the 6th of April 1972. And then Radha Balaba were installed a year later. Bali Mardan and Prabhupada brought Radha Balaba to Melbourne. Gaunitai were installed in 1975. Here. What's that? There's no mention of Jagannath being installed, actually. I think they went on Rath Yatra. That was their arrival. Then they were worshipped after that. In fact, there are some pictures where you can see Radha Balaba was on the bottom, and then Jagannath Balaram and Subhadra were on top of the altar in Burnett Street. So they had a double-decker altar. And Jagannath was above Radha Balaba. Very interesting setup. And, you know, Prabhupada went on Rath Yatra with Lord Jagannath. So Prabhupada has a connection with all of the deities in Melbourne, which is quite rare. You know, there are very, very few temples in the world that have the connection with Prabhupada that we do. We're very fortunate. And to have that presence of Prabhupada. A lot of places don't have that. Okay, so we're going to have the Abhishek tonight. There'll be some crowd control. Please make sure that the devotees don't push in at prasadam time. Jump queues, just fry people, basically. We're supposed to be known as gentlemen and gentlewomen. That's how Prabhupada wanted us to be known. Not prasadam queue jumpers. Right? That's India. That's Indian culture. I remember once I was in the Mumbai airport and there was a queue of about 40 metres long of people lining up to check in for this flight. And one man with his suitcase walked all the way. I was thinking, is this idiot going to walk past everybody and try and jump the queue? And he did. But the person at the desk talked to him for a little while and she said, and pointed to the end of the line. This guy had to walk all the way back to the end of the line. And he thought he was completely. He thought he was just going to walk straight down to the front of the line and just, you know, do what they do sometimes. Have you ever seen that being done? In India? Yeah. Some puffed up guy thinks, yep, I'm going to walk past 60 people and they're not even going to notice me. They're all thinking, if I could strangle that guy, I would. I've seen a take on that, and somebody did it to us in Mumbai when we arrived. This lady came rushing through the immigration queue, you know. And I said, oh, it's really important. So she came and she went through. And then And since Rupa noticed her, she wasn't in a hurry to go anywhere. She's just hanging around out here. Okay, and we'll announce, I guess we'll put it on the website and maybe put a post. Yeah, we'll put a poster up about the schedule for next Friday. Madhavananda?
I guess just to touch on the point of prasadam too, something maybe to think about for future is, you know, like making provisions for elderly people and maybe parents with kids, very small kids, because sometimes we see, especially guests, you know, holding their babies kind of towards the
other. No, that's, look, just if that's common sense. If somebody's elderly, look after them. If there's families with kids, look after them. But nobody's going to complain about, that's not what I'm calling queue jumping. Queue jumping is perfectly healthy, able, you know what I mean? So nobody's going to complain, what do you do with your kids, screaming brats, don't give them prasadam. No, let the children, let the old people go. Nobody's going to complain about that, right? And also, you know, elderly people, or I know that families with children can queue to see the deities, but elderly people, we let in. Just, you know, that really annoys me. We've got all the crowd control in, and then all the senior devotees decide they can walk in through the exit. Why? Why do we think we're so better than anybody else? Follow the queue. Isn't that better? I reckon. Except when it's my turn to come in. Okay. Gandharaj Sina Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Sri Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaurabhakta Vinda Ki Jai.